Welcome to the Shared Desk, episode 39. I don't know where that came from. I've forgotten how to do this. We're so sad.
What's sad is the fact that it's episode 39. Episode 38 was like 5 or 6 months ago.
I know.
Oh my God.
Didn't we say like, we're going to get back on track. Well, we lied.
Because it is the Shared Desk, and I am T. Morris.
When are you going to get off that milk diet, lad? This is vodka, where I come from, not soda pop. Well, this is a drink for a man. Scotch? Aye. Was invented by a little old lady from Leningrad.
I will contest that this weekend when we go out with Phil Rossi to celebrate his bachelordom.
You call shenanigans on me, motherfucker?
We're going to be doing a lot of shenanigans.
Oh, sweet foul mouth, Phil Rossi.
And sitting across from me, who is this lovely, lovely lady in front of me?
Who am I, Philippa Valentine?
Reminds me of the old days.
You were never on top.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Right.
Fair cop.
Oh, my God. It has
been... So we're back.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Okay, in our defense, there's been a lot of stuff going on.
Oh,
I've been
man.
Back and forward to New Zealand 4 times since the beginning of the year.
Yeah,
I've crossed the Pacific 4 times this year.
And you know, there is something a little pissy. I'm just going to go off and say it. A little pissy when we're talking about podcasting and Gail Carriger has the balls to say to me,
"What is your major malfunction, numbnuts?"
I mean,
well, she does have us on that
and,
one.
And she wasn't a corset, so I really didn't pay much attention. But you know, hey, love you, Gail. That's GailCarriger.com. Prudence.
Yep, it's hidden in the New York Times.
New York Times, yeah. But even Gail is feeling the pressure because at one point I said, "Hey, we got our book coming out, and we'd love to do something for you." And I remember that exchange.
How do you know this? You're the IT guy.
I'm not the IT guy. I write your blog.
Are you kidding? I have a blog.
Not the time.
She was like, "I got a blog." I'm like, "Yeah, you do."
Well, you know, it's the same for all
time
authors.
Time has gotten away from us.
Yeah. So on the plus side, though, we should mention that though we haven't actually released any episodes since November, we have in fact recorded 3 before this one.
Stay on target. Stay on target.
And we did.
We did.
We did. We didn't. We said we were gonna do better to get more content. We didn't say we were gonna release the content.
Yes, we're just gonna hold on to it like Smaug sitting on his pile of gold.
I need a drop in of Smaug.
Yes, I am fire. I am death. I am keeping on holding your podcasts. Yes,
all to podcasts.
Well, yeah. So, but on the plus side of having recorded those, we're going to drop them in the feed.
Yes, we are. And we have done the math.
You know, don't hold it to us that we might.
No. Hold it to us. Hold it to us for 2 months. Starting from this point on, for 2 months,
we've got content. We just need to edit it down and do the show notes. So.
Yes, exactly.
Really, if Geek Radio can put this out as regularly as they do, we should be able to put this out better.
And the Flintstress just had a baby.
They got a new baby. They're doing better than we. All we've got is like a nearly 11-year-old and 3 cats. So
I know. But we've also had a lot on our plate. As Pip said here, she's been there and back again, literally.
And then back again.
I think she's been to New Zealand in the past 2 months more than Ian McKellen and Martin Freeman put together. I mean, and the first time, now to be fair, the first time it was some serious stuff in Japan. Yeah. But things are good now. And
all is well. So the second trip was much calmer and nicer and much more fun. When are we going to talk about that?
That's exactly what we're going to talk about.
Give us some New Zealand love.
Yeah. In fact, you're actually going to be hearing not one but 2 segments of Kiwi Eagle versus Kiwi in future episodes after we get to the 2 months of content.
Oh yeah,
because
we were driving around New Zealand, we had plenty of time to talk about.
We did.
Eagle versus Kiwi.
We've got stuff going on, but let's let's go on and let's just jump right to it. Let's talk about what has happened. In a nutshell, we were not only dealing with personal matters of family, but we also had 2 deadlines. Pip, talk about those.
Well, the first one we had was for the social media for writers book.
which is exactly what it's called, social
media.
Yeah,
we would like, oh, well, that's just a placeholder title, and now it's the actual title.
It's the actual title, yeah.
Not sure if we can share the cover yet, but very shortly I would think we'd be able to.
That's fall 2015.
Yes, and it's quite a chunky size for a social media book.
And we already
think it'd be just 140 characters, but it's actually longer.
And we also have some major rewrites coming up. I have to teach myself Storify. And
since they killed Google Plus.
Yeah, and also...
Or at least shot it in the head.
Tumblr now looks entirely different. It's the same stuff, just everything's been
rearranged. Yeah, it's been moved around a bit.
Now,
yeah.
We should also mention, too, that the shared desk, I don't remember, it's been so long, I don't remember if we mentioned this, but we are going to start taking the shared desk, and we're going to be upping our game a bit, because we can't
You mean posting more than, like, every 3 or 4 months?
We're going to have to do that, but the other thing, too, is that this is going to become a companion podcast for social media for writers.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about new developments
in social
media. So we're going
to get, like, sensible.
We're really going to have to be better at posting. Let's just be honest. The other deadline we had, ironically, we're talking about, we're on deadline for a book that is now out.
Yes.
The Diamond Conspiracy. Book number 4
is
in
out.
The Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences series, and it is out, and we are so jacked about it. People are loving it. We've had several book bloggers say that this is the best one in the series, and I would agree. I'm partial to all of our books. I'm partial to Dawn's Early Light. I mean, there's some great stuff in The Janus Affair. And, of course, there's a soft spot for Phoenix Rising.
Because that's our first.
The tentacle award-winning Phoenix Rising.
Who doesn't love a tentacle award-winning
book? There you go.
But, of course, Dawn's Early Light.
There is that. Dawn's Early Light is also... There's a lot of stuff's been going on.
Well, it's been a while.
Yeah, I know. Won the RT Award.
The steampunk category. It's the reviewer's choice.
Yeah. And
choice.
And honestly... This was one that we did not see coming. Especially when you look at the competition in the category. Heck, two of the writers in the category have written for us,
yes.
And we
it was
know
a little awkward,
how good
really.
They are.
Yeah.
No, it's not awkward at all. It was like, oh wait, Delilah S. Dawson and Corinna Cooper are up for the award. We'll just sit back here and say thank you. It's a pleasure to be nominated.
We were very surprised and delighted.
Yes, very delighted.
Unfortunately.
Well, we're going to talk about that later.
We'll talk about that.
So we had that deadline to deal with. And then, of course, we had the family issues. Then you had the writer's retreat.
Yes. Which we will also be getting to in an episode to be aired later.
In an episode to be aired. Ironically, featuring neither one of us.
No, it's the easiest podcast we've ever done because we weren't
easiest
there.
Easiest podcast ever because neither one of us was there. I was not at the writer's retreat this year mainly because I got the new job, which I briefly touched on, I think, in November.
Yeah, I can't remember that. You just got it, I think, in November.
Yeah, and the reason why I did not go to the writer's retreat was because I wanted to just stay and get some time in at the job. Because I was going to be taking off for 2 weeks to go to New Zealand.
Yeah, it was basically Smoky Mountains of Tennessee or New Zealand.
Moonshine or craft breweries in New Zealand. I'm going to go towards
craft
New Zealand
breweries. Let's get to that.
So let's all right. So we did a very unusual approach to things this time around.
Our book come out and we left the country.
Yeah, that was number one. The second thing was that we, instead of doing the con at the end,
we kind of did it in the middle.
We did it in the middle. So we had 1 week in Wellington, and I remember we got off the plane, and I was a little foggy after that.
There was some beer. Well, it was my dad's 70th birthday,
right.
So we were there to celebrate, which was a nice coincidence to go and win with the convention. And so we went to Te Papa and we tootled around Wellington.
Te Papa. That's one of the things I wanted to talk about. Te Papa. So Air New Zealand is celebrating their 75th anniversary. They had a fantastic exhibit on the history of Air New Zealand. Very cool, very interactive, very Te Papa.
And now our daughter wants to be an Air New Zealand flight attendant.
Well, they had the costumes for the kids.
The uniforms of Air New Zealand are very cool.
They're very
like
classy.
Them. They're
very
classy.
Classy.
A little retro, even maybe.
Not so much now, but you actually saw like go-go boots that they wore in the 60s.
Nothing like a flight attendant with go-go
boots. Yeah, some great stuff.
It's really tough when you're putting things. They were saying putting things into the overhead lockers when you're wearing a short skirt. So
yeah, they also did
Troubles of the 60s.
Yeah, then they had like a simulator, not a real simulator where you feel every bump.
But you could sit down.
But you could sit down in an old prop plane, and you realize just how swanky air travel was.
True, but they were flying under the clouds, so it was pretty bumpy. I don't think I would have been able to fly.
No. But it was a really well done.
Te Papa does it nicely.
They do. And the one regret that we have is that we left right before their new exhibit, which is all about World War I. Now, so this really isn't an eagle versus kiwi, but this is more about the difference.
This is an edumacation?
Yeah. So here's the thing. In America, World War I is almost a footnote. It really is. It's like, well, that was the war that happened before World War II. And that was the,
you were in it for a couple of years.
Yeah. But World War One, I would dare say World War One is kind of the forgotten war.
In America.
In America. That's what I'm going to segue with this. In America. Now, I'm sure we're going to have plenty of people that will debate us on that point. And if you want to, please do at 703-791-1701. Or you can send us an email at t@tmorris.com or at...
pip@pjballantine.com.
But the thing about the whole Forgotten War thing is because
that cat is chewing.
Hey! Out of the pool.
This cat
out of the pool.
He just sees like cords and he just can't help himself.
This is an electrical cord. I'm gonna chew on it.
I'm gonna eat this.
So World War One is kind of the forgotten war. We don't have a lot of veterans around from that.
All the veterans are gone from the First World War.
Not all of them. There's still a few kicking around. A handful. But the point I'm getting at is that, when people talk about
Veterans Day.
It'd be
like 120.
Day, yeah. Well, no, they wouldn't. No, there are still a few left, I think. Look, I just did the voicemail and the email. You can go ahead and tell me when the last
come tell T that he's wrong.
Because Pip really enjoys that. Anyway, but the point I'm getting at is that, yeah, when people talk about Veterans Day, they talk about Memorial Day. A lot of times they will talk about World War II. They will talk about the Korean War. They'll talk about Vietnam. They'll talk about our recent wars in both Afghanistan and in Iraq. But you rarely hear people talk about World War I. And that's in this country. However, in New Zealand...
Well, because we were part of the empire, we were in it from the beginning.
Right.
So this year...
But it runs deeper than that, though.
Well, yeah. The significance, really, of... the Gallipoli campaign, which was in Turkey and New Zealand and Australia, the ANZAC troops, ANZ, was that they were sent there by the British High Command and they got decimated. There was a huge loss of life. And it was really the first sort of major battle that the ANZACs had been in. And it was a disaster. And it was also...
But it wasn't a disaster in a strategic thing because the ANZAC troops... took the hill at Gallipoli, and for some odd reason, the British showed up and they're like, okay, we got to bombard that hill. And the ANZACs are like, whoa, guys.
Well, they couldn't.
We're here.
Well, actually, the troop that actually made it to the top of the high ground, which was Chunuk Bear, was a Wellington troop. And they reached the top, and I mean, communications were pretty awful back then, and so the British didn't know that they were at the top.
And the guy that was kind of calling the shots this time, he was some hack. What was his name?
Winston Churchill. Young Winston Churchill.
He took some heat for that.
He took a lot of heat from it, and he was all, I think for the rest of his days it haunted him that so many people had died. Yeah. But so in terms of national significance, it was also the time when New Zealanders started to become patriotic. Up until that point, they'd been like, we're part of the empire, and then sort of a form of patriotism and know we're New Zealanders, not British citizens, started to form. And so it's become very central. You still see a lot of, as we were driving through New Zealand, you saw a lot of memorials and stuff.
You can't spit. And not hit
every
a
little
war
town
memorial.
Has had a war memorial because it really did have a huge impact on the
and
people.
This
of
is what I mean. This is what I mean by World War One has kind of become the forgotten war because you'll go through many towns in America and not see a war memorial. But even in the smallest, I mean,
tiniest town,
this could have been a town that had a fire station, a dog named Bernard. And and two families, both of which were are well beyond the years of childbearing, But they've got a huge freaking memorial, and usually it's for World War One. It's usually for the Anzac.
Well, because per head of population, I think New Zealand lost the most.
Yeah.
Or was neck and neck with Australia. But it's not something we really wanted to win.
And but what I find fascinating about this, because you were telling me on this with Armistice Day, which is celebrated in the Commonwealth. I don't want to say celebration, but the paying homage to those that have fallen, particularly in World War One, people have actually become more aware of it. Instead of fewer and fewer people paying respects, they're paying more and more. It's becoming more of a.
I don't know how much of this happens in America because I haven't seen it, but in New Zealand, Anzac Day is a day of remembrance. All the veterans in New Zealand are totally gone.
Right.
So these people have no. They've never been told stories about it, you know. Well, they've been told stories about it, but they don't have any connection, any visceral connection with it. But
their relatives show up, right?
Their relatives show up, their grandchildren, their great-great. People bring their children to these dawn services on Anzac Day. And not only that, in Turkey, in Gallipoli, you will find that young New Zealanders, when they're doing their big sort of backpacking tour around Europe or whatever, will make a stop in Gallipoli, and it's going to be crowded there on Anzac Day. It's a huge
event. Because this is the 100th year.
This is the 100th year.
The 100th year of Gallipoli.
Yes.
And the good people over at Weta Workshop, because they're done making Hobbit movies.
So what else? They're going to
do? They're making this incredible, like, three-dimensional... It's sculpture museum.
I wish we'd been able to see it.
Yeah.
But apparently it's supposed to be like you're going into the trenches and you're going to see different things and cutaways and
you might have heard me. Yeah, you might have heard me talk about Te Papa. I spoke there back in 2009, my first
wow,
trip. And I know,
a while ago now.
I know it was. And Te Papa is the New Zealand equivalent of the Smithsonian.
Yes. We only have one.
Yeah. But it's a beautiful museum, and the Boom loves going there. She loves every time. In fact, when Pip was getting on the plane, Boom said to her, "Don't go to Te Papa without me."
Yeah, in January, I was not, and I didn't. I kept that holy and sacred.
There you go.
Yes.
So, but right now, Te Papa's main exhibit is a salute to Air New Zealand, and it's really done well. I mean. So yeah, if you ever get out to New Zealand, and you might want to be thinking about that because, well, we're going to also talk about that too. But in 2020, New Zealand is making a bid. They're making a bid for WorldCon.
Well, they're going to bid before 2020. They're going to bid for the 2020 WorldCon.
What Pip said.
So, a few years.
So we've got that. But before we left Wellington, I did some reconnaissance work. I did some.
Is that what you're calling it?
Well, yes. Because we have to write it off our taxes.
you got to write a book about beer now.
I really want to. I want to do. You know, I did audition. I came very, very close, but they went with somebody else. But I wanted. I almost got an Audible job
doing
a book on beer, and so Audible. No, not Audible. So the craft beer scene has exploded since we last left New Zealand. Suddenly, the big game in town there was Moa.
Uh-huh.
There was
Max,
which I'd had before, and they make really good beer. And then there's Tuatara. Those were the three big ones that I remember, the three big microbrews. Now they are freaking everywhere.
There's like three in the central city and three in the valley, and then I'm sure there's plenty more springing up.
And I honestly didn't get to try all of them, but the one that
you gave it a try.
I did. I gave it a college try. I had some Tuatara while I was over there. I did not have Moa. I did have Max. I even slummed it for a bit, and I even had a Spites at one time. I was down in the South Island. But the gem that I came back with was, and I'm going to pronounce it properly, the Garage Project.
The Garage Project.
So let me describe to this, my fellow craft brewers. So the Garage Project is basically what it sounds like.
It used to be a garage.
It's just an old garage.
Where they used to pump petrol. And
now they're pumping beer.
I used to go there to get my tires inflated.
Get out. You didn't tell me that.
Yeah, I used to live just up the road from
that's
it.
Hysterical.
And I used to go and get my petrol and my tires pumped up and stuff there.
And now you get beer.
Yeah.
Well, I get it.
It's actually not a very, it was never a very big garage.
But it is a beautiful garage. It is a beautiful garage.
Well, it is now. It's full of beer.
It's flowing with beer. Yes, and you know, so it was very. It was.
It'd be cool if they had like the old pumps there, and they were just pumping beer out of there.
Oh,
Sir, that stolen lemur bit one of your prostitutes right in the face, and she says she can't go to hospital because she's, quote, tripping balls.
And I was tripping balls because when they gave me the free flight, I must have sampled like 7 different beers.
Yeah, good thing I was driving.
Yes. So I did bring back a few. There were some winners. There were some there were some meh beers. There was a couple of disappointments. But the beers that I did bring back that I wanted to talk about, first off, the labels. They did a really nice job with the labels.
Well, I think you brought back like two posters and like a t-shirt.
I bought back 2 posters, a t-shirt, and 2 beers. I had originally left with 4 beers. No, I left with 3 beers, and then Simon over at the con comes up to me and says, I want to let you know, I got this for you. And he hands me.
That was very sweet.
That was very sweet. I'm going to talk about that beer because that was one of the winners for me. But one of the big winners that I did not buy, and I will explain to you why, they had this wonderful label of it, and it looked like an old 50s B-horror science fiction movie.
Arrow Noir.
It was no, not that one. That was the 1930s. That was the 1930s. Film noir one that was called Arrow Noir. No, I'm talking about the one with the giant plant that was attacking people with beer, and it was called The Pernicious Weed. And it was their double hopped IPA, and it was terrific. I got a chance to sample that, but I did not buy it. And the reason why I didn't buy it was because there was one that wasn't in the taster menu, but I had to get it because Lord Coxswain, carrying one of Dr. Gwardbort's
Ray guns.
Is
on the front.
It was on the front. It was the VPA, the Venusian Pale Ale. Sadly, Lord Coxswain's porter, Tastes Like War, was sold out. But we did get the last poster. So I got the Venusian Pale Ale, and then I got another one called Smoke and Mirrors, which I'm saving for another time. But Pernicious Weed was a really good one. Mm-hmm. In fact, Pip was rather surprised when I said this. I told her, I think I found the equivalent of Dogfish.
Okay, so we can move there now.
Yeah, we're ready. We're ready to move.
That was the only thing holding you back, right?
Yes, yes.
Lack of Dogfish.
But yeah, the Garage Project, they're on Facebook. Check them out.
If you're in Wellington, go and drink.
We'll put links in the show notes.
They looked very popular.
Another memorable one I didn't have there. I actually had it at the bar, which was
the Little Beer Quarter,
or as we like to call it, Wellington's Hipster Central.
Yeah.
And
some things have changed in 5 years.
Yeah. So I tried their cereal milk stout.
Ooh.
Which is made with milk, and cornflakes. And I got to taste
it. How do you put that in a beer? It was really good.
It was really,
really
good.
Could you taste the cornflakes?
I could just taste a hint of the cornflakes. It was very cool. Very odd. It was like I didn't know if I wanted to get drunk or watch Saturday morning cartoons. I really didn't know what I wanted to do.
Oh, great. I can see your mother pouring you a cereal milk stout. Here you go, T.
Yes. Sleep well, son. So that was
Daddy and I want to get some rest.
There you go. So there was more stuff we did in Wellington, but we're just going to move on to when we got to Rotorua.
Yes, because we drove up to Rotorua, which is easily doable in 5 hours.
Yes.
And we ended up at Reconnaissance.
Reconnaissance 36, I believe it was.
I think so. It was at the Suduma Hotel.
That sounds good to me.
Suduma Hotel, right on the lakefront at Lake Rotorua.
So if you have friends from New Zealand, or if you are from New Zealand, or if you have ever visited New Zealand, in particular Rotorua, you hear people say, oh, it stinks.
It does have a sulfurous smell.
It does, but it's not as bad. There were certain nights.
It comes and goes.
Yeah, yeah. There are certain nights, and particularly certain mornings, where it was rather pungent. However, I got some really nice shots with my camera.
It does look like you were taking pictures on Venus.
Yeah, I know.
With Lord Coxswain.
Pretty amazing. And the con was fantastic. I mean, was it a big con? No.
It was for New Zealand, actually.
It was for New Zealand, though, and that was very cool. It was not a huge convention, but the thing that I liked about these small cons is that we had a great turnout at most of the panels.
Yeah.
So I was really pleased about that.
And you get to have quite a intimate, you know, sort of chit-chat with people.
Very intimate connection.
It's not Dragon Con. It's certainly not your Comic Con.
Oh, God, no. And
nor is it even a
BalticCon or even a RavenCon. No,
no.
It's just a...
What's the usual turnout for RavenCon?
About 500.
Okay.
So I mean, so yeah, it's a it was a good turnout. Now, granted,
for New Zealand,
but Andrew Joxer was the con chair. He did a fantastic job running the con. He took great care of me and Pip and Gail Carriger. We did a writing workshop.
We did a 1-day writing workshop, and I think that went pretty well. You taught dialogue, and I did characters, building good characters.
So we hosted the writing workshop, and
we did a book signing.
We did a book signing at Atlantis Books.
Yes, and then we wrapped the whole thing up at the end at the Government Gardens in Rotorua.
Wow. which is
a beautiful Victorian. I don't know. Pleasure garden, botanical garden.
We are going to have a link in the show notes to. I'm resurrecting my Flickr account.
So we were at the botanical gardens, and we were all there was a lot of steampunks there. I was quite impressed.
Nice turnout.
And it was a beautiful location for a steampunk get together. It was the tea rooms, which is definitely a Victorian building, and right across from the beautiful Victorian like extravaganza that was the government buildings there.
We also took advantage of our location. We were right next to the Polynesian Spa. So we went and we did the mineral bath.
Polynesian Spa.
That was very cool.
It was very hot actually.
It was very hot. Yeah. Boom.
It's
boom
getting
came.
Hot in here. We didn't take off all our clothes.
No, we did not.
There were a lot of other people in the pool. They would have been upset.
But the thing was, it was not only a cultural thing. It was just relaxing as all get out.
Oh yeah. By the time we got out, my legs were just like blah.
What we noticed too was that when you start. You're surrounded with the lush vegetation and everything, and you start at 36 degrees Celsius. The next pool over also kind of surrounded with lush vegetation and all that, but you're still outdoors, so it's kind of cool. That's 38 degrees Celsius. Then you go to the next one, which is in a grotto, slightly nicer view. That's 40 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, then you get
to the 42 degrees Celsius. That's the hottest pool, but it had the nicest view.
It was looking right out of the lake.
Yeah, so you just had to work yourself up.
And then, of course, the fact that the 10-year-old did the plunge pool twice, and the closest any of us got was you got up to your knees and then said, nope.
I said, all the nope. Absolutely not.
Seriously, Lana, call Kenny Loggins because you're in the danger zone.
So I just said all the nope to that. So, all in all, great time in Rotorua. Got a chance to have some dinner with Gail Carriger. Just book signings, workshops. It was a great time. Really, really, really good con. Nice way to start off the con season.
Yes.
And then we got down to the South Island.
Yes, we drove up to Auckland, and then we flew down to Christchurch, grabbed a car, and drove to Steampunk Oamaru.
So let's talk a little bit about Steampunk Oamaru. First off, big, big shout out to Agent Darling, Ian Clark.
I see why they call him Darling, because he is a darling.
So I'm just going to leave it to you. So you basically mentioned somewhere, because that was the one thing I would say that I don't like about New Zealand. There's no such thing as free Wi-Fi. Man, oh, shevits the Wi-Fi.
You found something you don't like about New Zealand.
God, what is up with New Zealand
and
the Wi-Fi?
Well, see, if you lived there, you'd just have a hotspot and you'd be fine.
Yeah, I had this crash-hot data plan from AT&T. Never again. So you mentioned on Facebook that we were going to Oamaru.
Yes.
And the plan for us was we're going to get in a costume, walk around.
We'll just walk around and
toodle around,
get back in the car and drive.
Right?
Yeah.
That's about it. And we originally said we're probably going to tootle off like at 12 o'clock. So I'm just going to set the scene for everybody.
We're just going to wander
about noon. It'll take us a couple hours. About noon, and we should see everything we need to see.
That never happened.
So the first fly in the ointment was Ian Clark himself, who said,
"Wait
a minute,
fly in the ointment. He's a darling fly in the ointment.
You guys are coming to Oamaru? Well." Would you like it to get and like me to get some steampunks together and we can have a cup of coffee or something? I thought sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
So we were like, there'll be maybe three or four people there.
That's cool. At the most. We get out the car. There's about 12 steampunks all huddled together waiting to say hey to us. And we're like, are you serious? And then we see this guy walking around with a pad and a pen, and I'm like, is that the press? We wound up on the front page of the Oamaru newspaper.
Banner.
Top of the fold, baby. Top of the fold. And these people, had, I mean, these people didn't just lightly punk up. We were underdressed.
Yes, I didn't feel like I had nearly enough accessories to be there.
I mean, one lady had a 1901 souped up bicycle.
Yeah, that was so cool. I thought it was just a prop sitting outside the cafe, but it worked.
No, it was actually a working bicycle.
This is a town that has embraced steampunk.
They haven't embraced it. They have put their steampunk boot upon the town's throat and tell it to call them a pretty girl. It is astounding how. In fact, we check in late at the hotel. And we said, yeah, we're science fiction authors. We just happened to mention that in passing. And the woman looks at us, oh, then you're here for the steampunk Amaru, aren't you?
Yes.
Well, you're going to have a lovely time.
And then we found out that the place we're going to stay is where Montagu Jacques Fromage is going to be staying when he is emceeing their big steampunk festival.
So, yeah, I mean, they have truly embraced steampunk. I mean, not just in places where you think they would, but like all through Victorian Amaru. You've got art stores, you've got artist
book
galleries,
binders.
You have bookbinders that are all doing something steampunk related.
Well, I think it all started because Amaru has these beautiful white stone buildings that are carved out of the local rock, and they were preserved because Amaru was like a port town, a city, you know. So these buildings were all...
They had a bigger gold rush than
Yeah,
than San
I mean, it,
basi-
it basically serviced the gold rush sort of people. They stopped there and then went inland.
Right.
So they have these beautiful buildings, and they had like a Victorian sort of festival, da, 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 and then steampunk came along.
And not only that, they've got steampunk HQ.
Oh, yes.
So the only thing we didn't see while we were there was the Gadgetorium.
Oh, we
but
have to
steampunk
go back
HQ, the best way I can describe this is that it's part steampunk, part art gallery, part interactive museum, part mind trip, part playground. I mean, it was everything. It was like I stepped into you know what? Oh, I got it. Remember the video game Myst?
Yes.
That's what this was.
There was a lot of, you could touch everything, you could kind of poke around. I played with the steampunk organ. That sounds bad.
I know.
The musical instrument, the organ. So each of the keys had a different sort of steampunk clickety clack or a
sound effect or
something like that.
Or a sound
so
clip.
You could play, and then it was very interesting.
And then but there was also this almost sense of foreboding, almost a little bit of
eeriness. Yeah, creep. There was definitely creepy.
Yeah, because there was there were these dentist chairs, these empty
dentist
chairs.
Everyone loves a dentist chair.
Yeah. And they were all facing this surreal films that were playing in constant loop.
It was like some sort of
brainwashing.
Yeah.
I mean, and these seats were all through the exhibit. I mean, it was really weird, but it was still cool.
It was awesome. Oh, and then you went into the time. What was that one? The room called
the portal. It was just called the portal.
Simple concept, but looked amazing.
Yeah.
So you sort of walked out onto a little gangway, and then the door shut. You shut the door behind you, and you realize that you're in a room that is got mirrors on the ceiling, on the floor, and on the sides. And then hanging down are these LED
random,
lights.
Random LED lights.
But they run different patterns through them.
And they play music.
And they play this sort of really surreal, gentle sort of music. And then the lights flash, and it was just, you know, it looks like you're looking down into infinity because there's infinity reflections with the mirrors and things. And it was just a very simple idea, but
simple
amazingly fun, interesting to do.
I mean, we did it like twice.
We did it twice, and Sonic Boom was like, ooh.
Yeah. I mean, Steampunk HQ did not disappoint. They did not disappoint in the least.
A lot of little things like the train outside. You put like a $2 coin in, and it starts, lights start flashing, and steam starts coming out, and woo,
I honestly just want to tell Thomas Williford over at Brute Force Studios, I just want to tell him, Thomas, just
move
do
there.
It. Just either move there or just pack it up and go there for a weekend. First off, the people, we kept saying to the people at for Steampunk Amaru, Thank you. And we're saying it again. And I don't know if Pip's going to do it or not, but I know that I was inspired by them. I want to write a story
set in Amaru.
and I want to explain what Steampunk HQ is and what the portal room is. I want to do. I want to work all this into a short story for season 4 of Tales in the Archives. If you don't do it, I'm going to do it.
Well, we will sort that out.
or we can do it together like we did with Sophia's Christmas. So, and then there was the stuff. Not only did you have Steampunk HQ, but if you go down, take a beautiful walk down to the shore, they had this steampunk cafe there called The Galley.
Yeah.
And it just looked like this old rusted out box.
Everything was, and outside that was a steampunked and kind of amazing playground.
Oh my God. We could not get the boom off of the boom. There's this giant boom, something of you used
like a flying fox, they would call it in New Zealand.
To lift out cargo from ships.
They
and
had
stuff.
Swing. There was a giant unicycle sculpture.
No, it wasn't a unicycle. It was a penny farthing.
It was a giant
penny farthing that was a swing set.
Yes, and then they had an elephant.
Yeah, they had an elephant that you could climb up, and then you had a pole that could slide down from it. But on the playground, that little rigging thing that I was talking about was a zip line. And as I'm watching Boom go on the zip line,
how many ever times she went on that?
I kept thinking to myself, this would never fly in the United States because this is just one lawsuit.
You fall off, you hurt yourself. Well, you didn't take enough care.
Yeah, and that's kind of the attitude in New Zealand.
Just brush yourself
it's
off.
It's like look, brush yourself off. If you, so long as there aren't any lacerations, you're doing fine. But so we said we got there about 9:30. We said, yeah, we'll leave by 12.
And then we said by 2.
We got out of there by 5.
Yeah, we got out of there by 5.
Yeah.
So
worth every penny.
It was. Even though it was kind of weird driving through we drove from the east coast to the west coast of the South Island at the bottom, and there's nothing there. And it was kind of eerie. We were driving and I'm like, thinking to myself, I better not have an accident here because there is no cell phone coverage and nobody for miles and miles. It was literally an hour of we didn't see a house. It was just the road and no cell phone coverage.
Pretty much.
So then we went to Queenstown, which is probably the most touristy town in New Zealand, which probably excites some people, but also the worst town in New Zealand for parking. Which is why the last time I drove there, I drove through it because I couldn't find anywhere to stop. But, you know, there's still lots of really cool things to do down in Queenstown, like, I don't know, jump off a bridge.
Which I didn't get to do. The weather was bad. The weather was bad. Pip was having a cow about me jumping off a bridge.
I wasn't having a cow.
You were having a cow. Oh. You talk a good game, Ballantyne, but man, right
you're
before...
You're just precious to me, darling.
You're precious to me. You're so precious to me.
Also, I need you to up your health and life insurance.
Yeah, there we go. Now the truth is out.
It needs to be double before you jump off a bridge.
Bazinga.
Fair enough. Okay, that works. But actually, we did go into the wine bar. I thought you would want to talk
about... Oh, yes, since the wine bar.
Since
it's
I talked
called
about
the
my
winery, wasn't it?
The winery.
The winery.
I thought it was called the wine bar.
We'll have to find it. Anyway, it's in Queenstown. It's on one of the main streets. And it's like, you liked it too. It had like...
I'm going to get to that in a second.
I've had today is like 6 gummy bears and some scotch.
So we'll get to that.
I've never seen anything like this in America. It's like a soda bar, you know, where when you're at a Panera and you go in and you get your, you know, it's got a line of there's Dr. Pepper and Sprite and stuff like this. Well, this one, they had a bunch of these for wine. And you got yourself a little card and it was like a running tab and you'd plug it in and you'd say, I'll have a taster of this or half a glass of that or a full glass of this.
Bazinga.
And it would charge you onto your card. So they had like 4 or 5 for wine and they had one.
And they had one for whiskey.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite?
No, whiskey.
I'm talking about whiskey. I'm talking about some good whiskey.
So we sat there and ate cheese and sampled stuff.
I almost walked out with a New Zealand double wood, but I talked myself out of it because I was already bringing back beer. You were bringing back 2 bottles of wine. I said, okay, you know what? That's enough alcohol.
But it was still a really fun concept because you got to try things.
It was a great concept. It was a great concept. And the thing was, I wanted to bring back the double wood mainly because that was the other thing about Amaru. For any whiskey snobs out there, Amaru is where they age the whiskey.
I think they create it in Dunedin.
They distill it in Dunedin, and then they take it up to Amaru.
It's probably cheaper up there to store it.
And I had these wonderful pictures taken of me in the aging room. So, I mean, I'm surrounded by all these casks.
Expensive
casks. And again, because I was a friend of a friend because I was there with the steampunks, the guy was like, let T have a sample of whatever he wants. So I had a 26-year-old, and I chose specifically the 1987 distilled because that was the year I graduated from high school. I said, I want to try this one. And oh my God, it was just ambrosia. It was wonderful.
And how much a bottle was that?
Yeah, that's the downside. It was about 250, maybe.
New Zealand dollars, though.
Yeah, no, still pretty expensive, but it was like 250, 300 bucks. Even Ian was like, yeah. And I was like, I'm not even going to.
Well, there's only one whiskey distillery in New Zealand, apparently.
Right,
so.
And they're quite good. And they've gotten, well, they were quite good when I first had sampled their wares, but they've gotten better. They've gotten a heck of a lot better. So, Queenstown was lovely, and then we had to leave, and it was kind of a bummer. But for the most part, it was just a really, really lovely, lovely time.
We came back very relaxed.
Very relaxed. I realize, and look, before we go any further, I realize this is not a writing, a writing centric show, but trust me, the segments that are coming, these great things that we've recorded or we have recorded for us.
It's wall to wall writing.
It's like, it's going to be wall to wall writing. So, but we, you know what? Let's talk about a good example of writing that's currently happening right now. Writers off the clock. So what do you want to do?
I don't know. What do you want to do?
I don't know.
No idea.
That bumper never gets old.
It never gets old, that one.
So, yeah.
So we come back.
And we've got a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah, no.
We still haven't finished season 3 of House of Cards, which we got to get to. Game of Thrones just started.
Yes.
We got to get to that. We are also several episodes behind Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
That's true.
There's a good reason why, though. That's the sound of probably some of the most airtight writing, airtight combat, and probably some of the most graphic stuff I've seen on television since True Detective.
Yeah.
Good gravy.
Giving the Punisher a run for his money.
Well, again, and that's the thing. Grant Pachoco, you know, friend of the show, Grant Pachoco said on Google+, he was like, if this is what Daredevil is doing, I can't wait to see what the Punisher is going to be.
It's going to be
it's going to be wall-to-wall bloodbath. So yeah, what we're playing right now is the theme to Daredevil. Not to be confused with the Ben Affleck vehicle of Daredevil.
No, this is not.
All right, first off, I'm one of the few people that liked Daredevil.
Yes, you're right. You are one of the few people.
I am one of the few. I liked Ben Affleck as Daredevil.
I'll give you that.
And which is why I don't have a problem with him being Batman. I think he's going to be, I really thought he got Daredevil. And I think he's going to be brilliant as Batman. We could have done without Elektra. We definitely could have done without Colin Farrell's the wackiness of Bullseye. Bullseye.
Yeah,
was there.
Bullseye.
And then, of course, you've got Michael Clark Duncan. He could be, rest his soul. He could have been reading the phone book. And personally, I loved the whole idea of Kingpin being big, bald, and black. He just total badass. So I really liked Michael Clark Duncan.
There were parts of it that were quite good.
I really liked Ben Affleck. But there is
story
no
was terrible.
Terrible story. But in the Daredevil television series, and I'm up to episode 5.
I'm up to 6.
She's up to 6.
I finished 6, yeah.
But here's the thing about Daredevil. I'm waiting for there to be too many characters. But just in the opening episode, the way it ended with them touching on all of these different characters made me realize they're setting us up. They're setting us up for what is about to come. And there is not one weak link in any of these characters that I'm trying to find.
And who would have thought Charlie Cox
Well, okay, okay. Now, you know what? I would have thought that because I've been a fan of Charlie Cox ever since I saw him in Stardust.
But a badass?
Okay, that I didn't expect.
Although, hold on, he was in Boardwalk Empire, and he did play, well, he played a charming badass.
He played a charming badass, but it was like, you know, how seriously could you take a badass when he's got a desire sex and looking for my lucky charms? You can send those complaints at tmorris.com. But first off, the way he's playing Matt Murdock is just, he's still very charming. But man, when he slips into the Daredevil persona, it's on.
He's scary.
It's terrifying.
Oh, the fight in the corridor. It's beautiful cinematography.
And wouldn't you know it, I was trying to figure out why is this so badass, and I suddenly realized what it was.
It's a bit like True Detective.
They took a page from True Detective, and they just did this 6-minute straight shot, one take thing, very much like what they did in True Detective. And they did it for Daredevil, and there was a sense of realism in that fight.
Yes, it was a fight in a corridor, and you saw Daredevil fighting people in other rooms. Well, you didn't see him.
You heard it.
You heard him. You might see people flying out of the door and stuff, but then he'd come into the corridor and have a fight.
And even he would fall on a couple of occasions.
Oh, that's the thing I really like about Daredevil is the more realistic fighting things. Like they were saying about the physics of throwing yourself at someone and knocking them down, well, you're going to end up falling on the ground too. Yeah. You can't, you know, physics don't let you reverse momentum.
Right.
Like that.
There's also that great combination. He's doing part parkour. He's doing part taekwondo.
And
he's
boxing.
Boxing and aikido. He's just got a mishmash of all these different things. And then,
he gets hurt.
He gets hurt.
And tired.
And in that fight sequence, in that great fight sequence, you hear this wonderful little dialogue with the boy that's been kidnapped, and Charlie Cox or Matt Murdock says, "You don't have to be afraid. I'm here to take you home. Are you ready to go home?" And it ends with him and the kid coming around. He's carrying the kid. And I'm sitting there going, "How can he carry the kid? He's got to be." But you can hear him just panting.
Yeah,
I mean, he is exhausted. But
it's got a great sense of realism. Oh, I was thinking about the other shot. There's a shot where there is a guy sitting in a taxi cab, and they do this great 360 shot, and it's taken from inside the taxi cab, and you look around, and that shows you the corridor. It shows you the bad guys going into the warehouse, and then it comes around again, and you're like, "Oh, look, there's Daredevil," and the camera keeps going, and he disappears, and then
the guy is singing the whole time, and not only do they pay attention to that shot, that continuous shot, but if you've got surround sound like we do in the Morris Man Cave, you hear the song go around the room, and it's very disorienting, but it's very, very cool. So what we've given away so far haven't been any spoilers.
Look out for those shots.
Just look out for these shots. The other thing you got to look out for is Vincent D'Onofrio. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Well, he's one of those very intense dudes.
Well, and the funny thing is that Vincent D'Onofrio, a lot of people forget this because they know him from Law & Order. They know him from Full Metal Jacket. But Vincent D'Onofrio, he's a funny dude. He is a very funny dude because he was the main bad guy in the original Men in Black.
He was the
cockroach dude. He was the cockroach dude.
He didn't look so good there, did he?
No, but he had that great, "Okay, so let me see if I get this right. I'm going to put my hands on top of my head like this." He's hysterical. And yet he gets these very, pardon the pun, heavy roles. And as Wilson Fisk, and I hope I haven't done anything wrong by saying his name, but as Wilson Fisk, a.k.a., and no one has said it yet or called him this yet, but Kingpin, he is just astounding. And
it's amazing the depth he brings to a character that should really just be a villain.
Michael Clark Duncan, for everything that great Michael Clark Duncan was, and he wasn't Daredevil, he played him like a comic book bad guy.
Yeah.
A comic book bad guy, okay? And that's fine, you know, because Kingpin kind of revels in being the bad guy. But they take this little twist with D'Onofrio's character, and I'm not sure if this is for all the comic book nerds out there, I'm talking to you, Jason Gregory Banks. He's more anime, but I am not up 100% on my Daredevil lore. I know some of it, but not all of it. And the way they play Wilson Fisk is that he doesn't like what he's doing, But he's keeping his eye on the prize.
He thinks he's doing something good for the city.
He's doing the greater
good. And I love that because often with the villains, nobody thinks they're a villain. No one goes, I'm going to... Well, generally speaking, they justify it.
I think Tom Hiddleston said this. He said, I don't play Loki like a villain because in his mind, he is not the villain.
No.
He's doing what's right. And but Wilson Fisk is a very complicated character because he even says, I've hurt people.
And I'm going to hurt people.
And I'm going to hurt more people, but it's for the right reasons. And there's this weird justification.
And you actually feel kind of sympathetic for him as well, which is a sign of well-written and well-acted character, I think.
I remember, I think on previous shows, and I know that on panels we've talked about, you know, oh, if BBC or if HBO wanted to do Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences, would you let them? We'd be like, yeah, sure, but now we really want Netflix.
Yeah, Netflix is obviously not they're making an effort to produce good content.
I mean, you look at House of Cards, you look at Orange is the New Black. Well, you looked at Orange is the New Black. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Daredevil, and it's just...
And Daredevil is only the beginning.
Right, that's the first... And I will say it's inspiring. It's really inspiring because when you think about it, you've got Netflix. You've got what Netflix is doing.
Yeah.
And then you've got ABC with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And then you've got Marvel Studios and the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Uh-huh.
And yet all three of these different networks, different content creators, they're tying it all together.
Yeah.
There was a wonderful little nod, and they've been doing these nods throughout. It was a wonderful little nod where, because it takes place in Hell's Kitchen, which is a borough of New York.
Apparently now Hipster Central.
And now it's Hipster Central. And in it, they basically say, oh yes, the rent in this place is very, very affordable because it's been going through renovations since the incident.
Yeah.
And Matt Murdock, his eyebrows go up and he goes, oh, is that what we're calling it now? The incident? And the realtor turns around and looks at him and goes, well, it beats death and fire from the skies above. And he was like, well, point made. And then there's another one where they're talking to a reporter and behind him you see a headline saying aliens attack New York. And then there's another point where this guy's going, a man in a black mask wiped out all of your men. If he was wearing an iron suit or had a magic hammer, I would believe that. But a black mask?
Apparently there's a bit where Foggy, who is... Matt Murdock's sidekick, said something about Matt's Greek girlfriend in college.
Oh, I missed that one.
Yeah. Elektra.
Yeah. I mean, but the way that they're just tying it all together, the way I don't know how Marvel does it.
They get good writers. Tie it back around.
And let's tie
writers.
Yeah, I mean, and really, that's. Marvel will always be my touchstone for this is what happens when you trust your writers.
Yeah.
When you trust your writers, because and let's
or
be honest,
hire good writers
or
for
hire
a start.
Good writers. And also, when you look at something like Daredevil, I mean, who are the big names in Daredevil? Well, there's the girl that was in True Blood.
Vincent
D'Onofrio is the biggest role. He's the biggest player in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's not a Robert Downey Jr. He's not a Chris Evans.
He's a character actor.
He's a character actor. But you know, most people go Vincent D'Onofrio. Yeah, the guy from Criminal Intent. Oh, him. And then of course the lead is Charlie Cox. Nobody knows who that is unless you say, oh, he's the guy that was in Stardust or the guy who was in
Boardwalk Empire.
Oh, him. Oh, yeah, he's pretty good. This just shows you that. If you get talented actors, not necessarily big name actors, but talented actors, good writers.
Don't
skint on the good writers. And then you get really talented people doing cinematography. Mm. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's shot in shadow, and it works. It works.
Oh, and the fight scenes are so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Brutal.
Brutal. They're visceral. I mean, I'm just going to.
You can almost feel like the blood's going to hit you in the face.
I'm waiting. I really want to talk to Matt Wallace about this. I want to talk to Matt effing Wallace, and say, bro, your thoughts, because I'm sure because if it makes Matt Wallace go ooh, you know they're going deep.
I don't think there's anything that makes him go ooh.
Yeah, as Matt Wallace we're talking about. Maybe Paul Cooley. Maybe Paul Cooley would go, ooh. Whatever the case, Daredevil.
We went, ooh, so that's all that counts.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. There we go. We've done some twisted stuff in our books.
So we got to the end. Let's see if we get this one in the feed. That's the real achievement.
That's the real achievement. And again, just so you know, Pip, she said to me, oh, yeah, we won't go any more than 30 minutes. We're near it in an hour. So I hope you've enjoyed this little trip down memory lane about where we've been, at least for the past 2 weeks, and all this good stuff. Don't worry, we're going to get back on track with writing topics and things that make you go,
hmm.
Although lately there's some things in the science fiction community that's been making a lot of people go, you're not going to hear us talk about it here.
No.
Not unless
buy us a drink at one of the events and maybe we'll give you our opinion.
A nice segue.
Or maybe we'll just drink.
Yeah. speaking of which, if you're wondering where those events are,
RavenCon
next week. Which actually will be this week, the week that this drops, that's when we're going to be at RavenCon.
So come to Richmond, Virginia.
That's April 24th through the 26th. And then we're going to just jump straight into May. Now, May, I've got to stick around because I'm going to be the best man at Phil Rossi's wedding. Yep, I am the best man.
You call shenanigans on me, motherfucker?
Maybe
and that's,
tomorrow.
That's the exact moment he decided to make you the best.
Exactly. but while I'm going to be doing that,
where
are you going to be?
Well, maybe we didn't mention this.
No, we did mention it, honey.
Dawn's Early Light won the RT category, and someone has to go and pick that up in a pretty dress, and since T doesn't have a pretty dress, it's me.
Yep. So that's going to be May 13th to the 16th. Pip will probably wrap things up with the signing on Saturday morning. And then
I'm heading home. Well, yeah. Saturday afternoon. Saturday afternoon. I'm actually doing a couple of panels. I think I'm doing one on e-books, and I'm supposed to be doing one on tension. With PJ Schneider. Not tension with PJ Schneider. PJ Schneider is on the panel.
I'd kind of like to see a panel on tension with PJ Schneider. I'd like to see some tension between you and PJ Schneider. That'd be kind of fun. And you know, and the best part of all is you can talk about how we took tension and stretched out over four books.
Okay, so yeah, so I'll be in Dallas and then I come home and then the next weekend.
That's it's an oldie but a goodie. Bad news, Steamtopia is not happening. Good news, we're going to be at Balticon. That's Balticon, May 21st to the 25th. A Friday night of Balticon, starting at 5 o'clock. That's when we fire up the grill. 5 o'clock, it's going to be the what we're calling the PG Holyfield Memorial Meet and Greet. Meet spelled M-E-A-T. Here's the rule. You basically bring meat for yourself and bring meat for a friend. And then you show up
and hang out. And watch T grill.
I grill for 4.5 hours, especially, it'll actually be 5.5 hours if Jason Gregory Banks gets pulled into an anime panel. But yes, we're going to be there Thursday night. So May 21st to the 25th. Not only do we have the meet and greet, we'll also have a dance also celebrating the life of PG Holyfield.
We'll also have some of the books.
We will also
the anthology.
We will not only just have the anthology. We will also have copies of the Diamond Conspiracy. We will also have copies
of
the role playing game. And already Nobilis Reed, who you're going to hear in the next show.
Honestly, it's great.
It's great. It's awesome. Nobilis Reed is actually bringing his copy, and we are going to have a full on role play game.
Woo-hoo! And we can roll some of those pretty steampunk dice.
Yep, and Nobilis has volunteered to walk us through it because this will be our first time with Fate.
It should be fun.
Yeah, it should be fun. So,
have we got anything after that?
Yep, in June 19th to the 21st, Capital Con. That's
our backyard.
Right in our backyard of Washington,
D.C. Literally, we're not putting on a convention in our backyard.
And if you come to Capital Con, you will get to meet our very first cosplayer.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Christina Payton, who runs the Tumblr. I believe
Eliza Braun is my guru.
.tumblr.com.
Yes.
In the link in the show notes.
She has two costumes, one we know about, one we do not know about.
She's unveiling them both at Capital Con. She'll be walking around doing her thing.
As Eliza.
So, yeah, going ahead and do that. That takes us up to June, and anything else beyond that, well, you're just going to have to listen to upcoming shows, which, yes, we will be recording. We have to because we've got this book coming out, Social Media for Writers, and we have an entire section on podcasting and on the shared desk. And
I think one of the things that we suggest is consistency.
Consistency.
So, yeah, that's a big one. Be aware of that.
So, yeah, we're not expecting a Parsec nomination anytime soon.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year.
Maybe I'll just organize a group of puppies.
Oh, you went there. You went there.
Woof, woof.
The sad podcasting puppies. Woof, woof. Is this on? Is this on? Check one. Check two.
I couldn't leave it. I just had to put
you
it in
really
there.
You really did. You really did.
That sounds like...
You're a bit of a rabble rouser. Naughty, naughty girl. So we're going to wrap it up here. what's going to happen is that Pip will do an intro and an outro for these shows that we got in the tank, and then we'll take it from there. But until then, just remember, folks, that the Shared Desk is a non-commercial, no derivative, share alike 3.0 United States license. It's protected by Creative Commons. You can find out more about them at creativecommons.org. Hey, not too shabby.
Not too bad.
And we're going to wrap this up. So thank you very much for sticking with us. Yep, we're still out here. So until next time, enjoy the ride.
We'll catch you soon.